The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, the book Canine Crime Busters delves into the history and heroism of UK police dogs, exploring their evolution, highlighting amazing canines, and celebrating their bond with handlers. To tell us more, the author joins us now. Welcome to the show, Andy Boot.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. So can I ask then, Andy, were you a police officer? Is that why you you wrote this book?
No. The route to the book being written is strangely roundabout. We've always had dogs, and I've always been a lover of dogs. But the odd thing is, the book came about because of a book fair. We went to a book fair and there were a pile of old paperbacks, spines up, and one of them said, Dog versus Crime, Holman. Dog versus Crime was intriguing, and Holman is my other half's name. So we picked the book out, and it was actually by PC Arthur Holman, who was the handler of Rex the Third, who was a legendary police dog in his day. The book is quite incredible, and it got me thinking about the fact that we actually know very little about the day-to-day lives of police dogs. We see them, but what happens to them? How do they get selected? How are they bred? What kind of careers do they have? What happens to them afterwards? It started off a whole chain of thought that ended up with the idea for the book and contacting a number of organisations who were quite happy to help give some more much-needed publicity to dog units at a time when cutbacks in police forces mean that dog units are one of the first things that come under the hammer.
Yes, of course. Well, you mentioned Rex, PC Arthur Holman's dog, PD Rex. Rex was apparently responsible for 120 arrests.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite an amazing animal. The large number of arrests is all the more remarkable for the fact that Rex only had a 5.5 to 6 year career, because it was sadly cut short by an illness. I think part of the reason he has so many arrests to his credit, apart from the fact that he was such a good dog, is that he came along at a time when dog units were only just starting to be developed post-World War II. And Rex's incredible ability, his incredible rapport with Holman, and the fact that both of them were so dedicated to their job meant that whenever there was a need for a dog in the Met Police area, it was always, go get Holman and that dog of his.
Oh, was he the first ever drug sniffer dog then?
I don't know if you could call him the first per se. He was certainly the first to actively, as far as I could tell, go into operation. I think there had been some experiments, as there always were, with what dogs could do, particularly in the British Transport Police, where the concept of a sniffer dog is absolutely ideal for dogs that work POLTs, railways, and so forth. But I think it was Rex's amazing ability that planted the idea in the higher echelons of Scotland Yard. And so when they decided they would try and experiment with the idea of a dog that could sniff drugs, Rex was the obvious choice. His ability, his intelligence, and his record just spoke for itself.
And what type of dog was Rex?
He was a German Shepherd.
Right.
He'd originally been trained as a dog to accompany a night watchman, a security dog in a warehouse. But when they bought in an automated alarm system, Rex was surplus to requirements, and he was handed over to the new Met Police dog section that had only just been started. And it's interesting because at that time, the Met were concentrating on Labradors. Yes. And it was only the work of the Surrey police section that had made the idea of an Alsatian much more commonly amenable to the police.
Is that the one at Keston?
Keston, that was the Met Police, yeah.
Right.
They had started that, and they had had they'd had a man in their ranks called Harry Derbyshire, who was in records at CID. And he'd always been interested before World War II in the idea of using Alsatians as service dogs. And he had a dog of his own, which had been a German military dog, which had been captured and brought back to England. And I think the thing about Harry Derbyshire, he was so determined that the Alsatian was the perfect breed that when the Met told him they weren't interested, he didn't want to work with the Met police section. However, over in Surrey, there was a superintendent named Harry Roberts, Tom had been working on the idea of dogs for over 20 years, since his early days as a constable, when he'd seen some bloodhounds in action. He was fortunate that his new chief constable at that moment was a man who bred dogs for show, and his wife bred dogs. And so the idea of a dog section became something that was much more doable. Between them, they recruited Harry Derbyshire, gave him a promotion, gave him a nice large house with a large garden for training, and said, right, this is what we want you to do. And he was so successful that within a couple of years, they had the Mount Brown Training Centre specially built. And Mount Brown and Keston became the two centres that really set the benchmark for dog training in the UK.
So you mentioned Labradors, German Shepherds and Bloodhounds. Can any dog be trained to be a police dog then?
I wouldn't say you could train any dog, but there are dogs of any breed that have the ability and the capacity to be trained. It is down to the individual job. The individual dog. The best example of this is in the book, Zippy. Zippy was a fox terrier.
Uh-huh.
He was rescued from a life of abuse when he was a pup. And he was put into kennels. Now, at that time, Essex didn't specifically breed their own dogs. They relied mostly on the knowledge of a woman called Vera, who ran the kennels. And this little old lady was as sharp as a tack. And she could see Zippy's work with a bowl meant that he had a natural proclivity to be trained. And because of that, she put him forward. She trained him herself. She got the Essex Force interested in him, and he was matched up with a handler who was progressing from having an Alsatian, a general purpose dog, towards using a sniffer dog. Now, most sniffers are Labs or Spaniels. You very rarely get something like a small Fox Terrier, especially one with the kind of personality Zippy had. I think it's best to say that I spoke to someone who said, Zippy, yeah. His attitude was kill them all except Tony, which was his handler. Yeah.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. And who's Taz then, Andy?
Taz was an Alsatian who was trained and handled by Elaine Michaels, who was another police officer in the Essex Force.
Right.
Taz's story is a perfect example of how these dogs are not just a piece of kit that can be taken in and out and used. They are empathic animals. They form a strong bond with their handler. They react to their surroundings. And sometimes they too can suffer from the same kind of issues that police exposed to trauma can have. Taz was a brilliant dog. He was well-trained, he was good in the field, He was sensitive. He was understanding. He had the ability to really turn it on when he had to. On one occasion, in Colchester, which is a military town, and so Friday, Saturday nights in Colchester can get a bit tasty. There was a man who was managing to fend off a military policeman and an Essex police officer. Elaine turned up with Taz. Taz managed to pin this guy down so that he could be arrested and taken in, which two large men between them had not managed to do. That's how good he was at all aspects of his job.
Wow, wow, but, how interesting.
But for Taz, there was an occasion where he had to go and scope out for a gun team a house where a woman and a child were being held hostage. He went into the house, and what he was confronted with was the woman had been killed and the child had been killed. And Taz came across the child, and because he was living with Elaine, and Elaine's daughter who lived with her had a small girl the same age, although Taz knew, as all dogs would, that it was not the same child, seeing a child in that situation, it had an effect on him. Mm. He was not the same guy. He couldn't progress beyond that. It was like the trauma of seeing that suddenly caught a raw nerve with him.
Oh.
And although dog trainers in Essex said that, yeah, Taz can go back to duties, Elaine knew that he wasn't the same dog, and she asked for him to be retired after that. And he lived a very long, happy life with her. But he was definitely affected by this. And it's worth remembering, I think, that any animal that's in service, military, police, they are subject to those same kind of traumas. And that's something that's not really been taken account of for a long time. And I think there is a better understanding of that now.
Yeah, I think that's important because we know they're intelligent dogs. We know they have a bond with humans. So why wouldn't they suffer trauma like we do?
Exactly, exactly. They are part of us as we are part of them. If you have a dog of your own, you just know, they know your moods and you get to know their moods. It's the same thing. You have that kind of close bond with an animal. And I think for a dog handler, in some ways, that bond can be even more intense because of the situations that they find themselves in.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned Elaine, that her handler lived with them and then she retired, the dog retired with them. Is that the norm? Do they go home with the handlers and do they eventually retire with them? Because that's their buddy, I suppose.
It's something that I think all handlers like to do, but it's not always practically possible. The average working life for dog is about 7 years. And once that happens and they're retired, often they go and stay with the handler. But if the handler is continuing in the job and has another dog, it can depend very much on the relationship between those two dogs, whether they can get on. And there are other things that come into it as well. For instance, with Zippy, when he retired, he stayed with Tony for a long time. Tony had other dogs. He'd had other dogs that he'd retired and had stayed with him. But when Tony's partner had their son, Zippy was great with him when he was a baby. But as he became a toddler, you know what toddlers are like. If you've got animals, they want to fuss them, they want to pet them, and they can be a little bit heavy-handed sometimes unintentionally because they're young. Tony could see that Zippy was getting old and a bit cranky, and he didn't want to put either his son or the dog in a position where something would happen that could harm either of them. And so that he decided the best in that case, the best instance would be to get Zippy rehomed. which is not easy when you've got a character like Zippy. You basically didn't want to know anyone except Tony. But there was a very good family who could take him on. The wife, Sue, she was brilliant with him. And Zippy had a very happy retirement for the last few years of his life, because he was virtually blind and deaf and toothless by that point.
Oh, bless
him. But still the same old Zip in many ways. Yeah.
Carry on.
No, I was just going to say, for most handlers, they can keep their dogs. It's only in those kinds of circumstances, really, where they end up getting the dog rehomed. Because of that, there are a number of charities set up across the country, regionally, that deal with this. They help pay with the cost of vet bills. They help get dog rehomed. They help the families. They offer support. The police can't afford to do this because their budgets are so squeezed as it is. So it comes down to the charity sector. And the national body that administers these local charities is called the Association of Retired Police Dog Charities. You can find them online. They have links to every retired police dog, local, regional charity across the UK. All of these people do splendid work. And there's also the National Foundation for Retired Service Animals. They cover dogs. They also cover things like any other kind of service dog that's used, any other kind of service animal that's used. For instance, horses. It's what happens to horses when they're retired from the services. It's a problem because all services don't have the budgets to look after these animals when their working life is done. And so someone has to take that responsibility on. There's always people that want to do that, but they need help. And that's what these charities are there for.
Yeah, brilliant. And I believe there's also the Canine Memorial Organisation.
Yes, that's really important. They have their own website, and they do fundraising, and they've got a plaque which is situated in the Police Memorial Garden, which is in the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire. They want to raise awareness of what happens with these dogs who can have long service life, suffer injury, recover from it. Some are not so lucky in the service of their duty, and they need to be remembered. There's also a memorial that's going to be situated in Oaklands Park, Chelmsford, which is also going to memorialise these dogs and hopefully draw more attention to what happens to them when they retire, and just so we remember them in the same way that we remember servicemen who have fallen in the course of duty.
Yeah, absolutely. Great idea. And you mentioned horses, police horses. Do you think that might be your next book?
I don't know.
It's a good idea.
It's a very good idea, actually. It's a very good idea. Do you want royalties on that?
Yes, please. Yes, please. In the first interview. Bless you. It would certainly be an interesting read. It really would. But for now, this book is called Canine Crime Busters, the story of Taz, Zippy and the UK's amazing police dogs. And it's by Andy Boot, who we're chatting to now. Thank you for bringing all this to our attention, Andy. It's been great to learn more about it.
Well, thank you for letting me talk about it. It's been great. Thank you.
You take care now. Bye for now. Bye.
Bye.